Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and the daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. We're going to listen to a song now called The Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin.
With the baptism you belong,
Greetings and welcome back to Age of Heroes, the Elysium Project. Tonight our show is Focus on Cannabis with Dan Ulloa, and he will be reviewing a book, Wake, Bake, and Meditate. Greetings and welcome, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, Hercules. How are you?
Okay. I'm curious to hear your impressions of the book, Wake, Bake, and Meditate. It looked like an interesting book.
Yeah, it certainly was an interesting book that I was able to read that you sent me. Yeah, I liked it.
So tell me about the basic premise of the book. Is it really waking, baking, and meditating? Is that what the whole focus is?
It is, yes. Yeah. So it's really interesting. So it's very much written from like a New Age perspective for those who are novice in waking, baking, and meditating.
Okay.
So it's interesting in that fashion. So she does go into great details about the nuances of cannabis, how it has medical benefits, how there's a history of it being entwined with spiritual benefits. So it was really interesting in that way. And like she goes into, for example, you need to have a journal to document then like the sorts of cannabis you're going to try and like when you tried it. It was really interesting that she goes into all this detail. She herself is a patient in Illinois, a patient of the medical cannabis program there, coping with fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. She goes into... Mm-hmm.
In any type of spiritual work, you know, whether it's working with dreams or experimenting with altered states with or without substances, it's a good idea to, you know, to track what you're doing. That's a good idea too. If you're like weightlifting, keeping track of the poundages, what vitamins you're taking, what your routine is, what your fats, proteins, and carbohydrates are. And this one, by looking at the journal, you judge to see what's working, what isn't working, what are like ill effects, what are pleasant effects. So it's the same thing with magical training too. If you're working with your mind, with your inner self, with your spirituality, the record keeping or the journaling helps you, you know, basically provide you with a structure so that you can better navigate in time.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's good. That's like a really good point in that fashion. Yeah.
So you said that you're a novice. Are you a novice in being awake and baking or in meditating?
No. I'm not saying I'm a novice in any of those. I'm saying the book is for novices in those fields.
Okay.
So, like, I've been meditating for some years, for example, and have, like, an established practice. But, so, like, she really goes into detail about, like, what prayers even to say. Like, so from, like, a New Age perspective, like, it's interesting. Like, there's prayers to the divine feminine. I think, like, the divine masculine. There's prayers for, like, health. And, like, she tries to keep it, like, ecumenical or non-denominational. Saying, like, pray to a deity that you believe in. So it's interesting in that fashion.
So you're meditating.
Yes, I do meditate, yes.
Me too. I've been meditating for years twice a day for around 20 minutes each time. And I swear by it.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I really should do it twice a day. But times are crazy.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted your review.
Yes, it was interesting in that fashion. She goes into a little about like the technicalities, the basics of cannabis in terms of how there's, you know, there's a sativa, which makes you generally a little more active. And then there's like the indica strains, which make you a little more somber, you know, relaxed and eager to do so. In that fashion. So that was really interesting there. So she mentioned like this, like terms, like technical terms. She talks about cooking it or baking it literally in terms of making like canna butter, cannabis butter, a canna oil or ghee,
which is similar to butter, apparently. That was really interesting and talks about decarboxylation, whereby you have to, like, literally bake cannabis in, like, an oven to get, like, the certain chemicals to be released for the food. So, like, she has, like, a little recipe for that. And then, like, recipes to make the butter as the oil, and then a lot of good recipes if you, like, you're really cooking inclined for, like, cheese, cookies, smoothies, teas, meatballs. Yeah, that was really amazing.
Meatballs, too? Wow.
No fashion. Yeah, meatballs.
I remember when I was in high school many, 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 many moons ago, back then people used to make brownies. With either pot or hash or something in them. So if you didn't want to ingest any substances, before somebody gave you a brownie, you had to, like, inquire because you could make the assumption that it wasn't laced with something.
Yeah, brownies really are, like, the standard edible, you know, that people really enjoy. So there's probably a brownie recipe in there, I'm sure. Some people like edibles because there's no smoke. You know, smoke can be harsh on the lungs and especially pungent versus an edible. So, yeah, there's definitely, like, a lot of good stuff in this book. I would say, like, really, like, helping people, like, learn to meditate and, like, incorporate cannabis, dealing with some of its nuances. So she herself, you know, is, like, in the New Age fashion, has written other New Age books. So she also has, like, other books about, like, the nature of, like, cooking and with cannabis. It's really good that way. So I'd say, like, it's still, like, accessible in that fashion.
Yeah, the author is Kerry Connor, and the book was published by Llewellyn Publishers. And Llewellyn is... you know, one of the world's better known New Age and metaphysical book publishers.
Oh, wow, nice.
Now, we've had conversations about our spiritual paths and, you know, what's come before and what we're looking to move towards in the future. Does this book help you in your spiritual path at all?
It certainly, like, has, like, some interesting, like, meditations with scripts, for example, that like, I would consider, like, reading in meditation.
Okay.
The way she has. So I did try one of those. That was nice. I think I tried the healing one for my bad stomach. So that was interesting. But yeah, it's a really good book. It's really, like, a how-to book, like, how to do this with, like, and, like, recommendations. So, like, my book, Cannabis 101, it's really, like, the history of it and then, like, discusses, like, the issues with it. And it's, like, made from articles and, like, structured in that fashion. This is more like a cookbook recipes.
So there's a good beginner's book for somebody who's interested in the topic and wants to experiment with different ways of using cannabis toward a more spiritual life.
Yeah.
So I get the bake and I get the meditate parts. What's the wake part about?
Well, so usually, like, the phrase wake and bake is what is, like the phrase that they're playing on. So
okay.
Wake and baking mean, like, waking up and then, like, you're going to, like, consume pretty much as soon as you get up in bed. And then so, but then it's like a play here, like, with the baking, because there's also baking in there. But then, you know, there's, like, a spiritual awakening, you could argue.
Okay, so it's a play on words. There isn't really a wake. You know, the book isn't divided, like, into three categories. It's just kind of part of the process.
Yeah, it's really like a play on words.
Now, you...
Yeah, I like the phrase wake and bake. You know, people like to wake and bake in that fashion, you know, with their favorite strains and whatnot.
Now, you had mentioned your book. How's that coming along? You're a new author, although you've written extensively in, you know, periodicals and magazines, and you're currently writing as well for a website. Is that correct?
Right. So I'm the editor of HeddyNJ.com, where we cover cannabis news, CBD, and hemp, focused in New Jersey, but also a bit of Pennsylvania, New York, and the country. And then I also do other sites. I do Hudson County government.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So I enjoy that.
Uh-huh.
So I'm enjoying covering Canada. Actually, there's been a lot of news on legalization that would be really good to discuss, actually.
Well, I want to hear about your book first and how that's coming along. And then, yes, definitely, I want to hear all about what's going on because I'm getting a lot of peripheral news people are sending me or that I'm discovering in my own researches. So I'd love to hear, because you're in the middle of it, what's going on.
Yeah, so it's been interesting. Thank you. So it's been interesting being like an author and really self-publishing, especially like the self-publishing part of it. And, you know, I've been able to like get like a few of my friends to buy the book. I'm very happy about that. But, you know, we submitted, for example, the book for like a couple of reviews. And, you know, I'm sending the book off to a couple of people, you know, hoping to get on like a good like book club list. In that fashion, and really trying to like think of like things to do. And I think like post-COVID, and now that the news happened, you know, I think I can devote more time to that and like looking at independent bookstores, and similar places that might have be interested in having my book.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be interesting.
When the pandemic is over, and it will be over, hopefully sooner rather than later, there's a lot of things that you know I could suggest to you. Like, for instance, the libraries, they have authors signing books and giving short presentations. There's all sorts of fairs that are local to areas that have tables with authors. And then there's all the different service organizations like the Rotary Club and so forth. There's the mayor's wellness campaigns now that, you know, cannabis is legal and it's being seen for its medicinal qualities. Yeah, there's all sorts of different places you could promote your book and get to meet people.
Oh, yeah, definitely, certainly. Like, I'd love to go to, like, a lot of those, like, events and fairs that you were mentioning. So, we'll see what happens.
Okay.
But, yeah, onto the news is what I really wanted to discuss was that, actually, cannabis legalization has been signed into law by Governor Murphy.
Oh, wow.
So that, yes. Yeah, so we won. It was very good in that fashion. Now, Governor Murphy signed three bills into law. The first bill was S21. That's the bill that really sets up the cannabis marketplace in terms of the micro businesses that we'd like to see, in terms of people being favored from certain economically and socially disadvantaged communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're happy about that. There's a lot of good victories in the bill for that. Decriminalization was the other big bill. That was 1897 in the Assembly, 2535 in the Senate. That's really decriminalization. So it decriminalizes possession of up to 6 ounces of cannabis. It removes the smell as probable cause, which means like a cop could say, "Oh, I smell it now. Now, oh, like yeah. I have the right to search your car. That's gone now." So that's like a good victory for like social justice, like on a certain level. You know, we've really been finding that like this is really like enforced, unfortunately, among against minorities, you know, a lot more than it is among like white kids. The suburbs that get caught once in a while. This is really like hurts those communities and really creates like a second class citizenship for like a lot of people. Unfortunately, if they're like convicted as felons. For like a really small amount, and then these people aren't able to access, for example, scholarships, you know, a lot of jobs discriminate against that type of thing, so it's really difficult for them. And then the third bill was like a focus on discrepancy between the first two bills, and that's what really took a lot of the time, because the first two passed December 17th. And then the bills were ultimately signed December 22nd. So basically all this year was spent since after the 17th and after Christmas, it was revealed that Bill Murphy didn't like that there were no penalties against those who were under 21 caught with cannabis. That became a massive issue. It really became like a question of like civil rights, like in the wake of like the George Floyd Black Lives Matter protest, like how do police interact with, you know, like certain, you know, like black and Hispanic youth, and like how often does it turn into a negative like situation? And dealing with that was really these consequences, these bigger questions society's trying to deal with became the problem. But ultimately, they came up with a three-tier system. It gives them just like a written warning for the first time. There's no penalty. They don't have to go to court. There's no possibility of recommended rehabilitation. So it's really good that way. So, you know, we're really happy that he signed the bills finally.
That sounds like a major victory. I know, although I don't really ingest substances, even rarely alcohol. You know, caffeine, I guess, is the strongest thing that I use. When I was a teenager, you know, I'm a long-haired person even now in my 60s. So I used to get stopped by police both here in New Jersey and in New York City. And they would always say, you know, I smell pot, which, if, you know, for anybody who knew me, that was ridiculous. But they would say they smelled it, and that would give them justification to, you know, search through my things.
Oh, wow. That's really an interesting story.
Yeah,
like,
so that's
police bias.
They stopped that. And I know that, you know, the penalties are ridiculous, you know, for, you know, especially now where we're inundated with accounts of criminality on a, you know, ridiculously vast level and nothing seems to be happening. And then a lot of people are incarcerated for, you know, minor possession of, you know, something like marijuana. So I'm glad that that's being, you know, rectified as well. And I remember when I was a little bit more politically active a few years ago, that the view toward people who had a substance abuse problem had shifted radically in terms of, you know, how they're treated and the possibility of, you know, rehabilitation and treatment rather than criminalization. So this seems to be progressing, and I'm very glad that our society is looking at it in a more enlightened way.
Yeah, certainly. It is really good that we're making progress. It was a long time coming. We had a referendum. We did not expect to have a referendum. It passed 67% of the vote. You know, that was in November, like when Biden was elected. So that was really great to see. You know, it was the most popular referendum in New Jersey. And of all the cannabis referendums that have been held in the United States on the state level, it was the most the pro-legalization side had ever won. So that was really great. But then, you know, like we were fighting, unfortunately, the legislature for a while. Because, you know, initially, you know, we had some problems getting certain criminal justice provisions into the bill. But, you know, those were, you know, there were provisions, you know, for, like, minority business people to get a certain percentage of the licenses. You know, some people might not like the hot, like, the percentage. They might say it's too low. We'll see. The other big, there is the issue that, like, right now in New Jersey, there's really, like, really little cannabis in the medical program, even for the amount of patients that they have. So it's really expensive. Many people believe it's because there aren't enough cultivators. So this limits the amount of large cultivators at 37. But people are saying that will, like, limit the amount of cannabis there is in New Jersey. People that wanted to limit it said that in Oregon the price collapsed because there were too many cultivators. And that ruined a lot of small business people who, you know, weren't able to afford it. And the price collapse to do business. So they're trying to prevent that. So we'll see how that goes. Small scale cultivation is not capped. And the bill is, there's otherwise no cap, which is really good because we only have 13 locations right now in a program that's been operating since about 2013. So it's about 8 years old after it was signed in 2010.
So there's like a third of the locations that are allowable, so we still need two-thirds more. Am I understanding that correctly? There's like 13 and they're allowing up to 37?
So some of the 13 are, what do they call it, satellite locations or the prime location. So there's 12 license holders. Two of the license holders have yet to open. So the 12 license holders will get licenses, will be among the 37 cultivators. There's only 37 minus 12, 24? I think somebody said 24 cultivators more that could be, I guess, distributed then. Or 13. I'm sorry, I'm not good with numbers.
You mentioned basically... there's some progress, although it's still progress, you know, in terms of the use or the availability for health reasons. How is the awareness? Because more people now that I've talked to seem to be open to the medicinal properties of cannabis, especially the use of CBD oil. A lot of people are giving me, you know, their experiences with CBD oil. One of the complaints is that it's gotten expensive. And then, some people said it was really, it worked really well. Some people said it didn't work very well. Some people said the expensive ones worked very well. So, again, I don't know. I've never tried CBD oil. But there is a permeation and there's an openness to it, especially for people who are looking to use it for pain management. Also, economically, I don't know anywhere near as much as you do, but from what I've gotten through the popular media, it is very helpful to the health of communities to encourage the growth and sale of cannabis, that it helps the economy and that now you can tax it. Is this true, or is it true yet in New Jersey, or what battles still need to be fought?
Yes, there are battles that need to be fought. Oh, wow, that was a lot of questions there. There are a lot of battles that need to be fought. CBD is really interesting. It ranges widely in quality. Don't buy CBD at a gas station and expect it to work well.
Okay.
CBD ranges in the type that it is. So some CBD has a tiny amount of THC, and a lot of people argue that makes it more effective because the chemicals work together in what's known as the ensemble or entourage effect.
Okay.
The cannabinoids. So THC is the cannabinoid that gets you high. CBD is another cannabinoid that produces some of these other, like, effects that we're seeing. So you have, like, pure CBD CBD with the other cannabinoids, including THC, and CBD with the other cannabinoids, excluding THC. So they're supposed to be good for pain. You know, some vary. You know, I have a good one for pain, for like sore muscles,
mm-hmm.
In that fashion. A lot of them are drops that people like, tinctures or oils that you have to take under the tongue. You have to hold it under the tongue. It makes a difference when you hold it at least 30 seconds.
Okay.
In CBD. So, you know, sometimes people like to say that you need like a CBD certificate of authenticity. So there's like an industry standard that says, oh, this is what's in here. This is like the X amount of THC and the other cannabinoids. So it would be interesting to see like the program scale up. The other thing is people want to grow it. And this bill does not allow it. The legalization right now doesn't allow it. And it remains like a severe crime, worse than possession was.
Oh, wow.
That's like an issue. And people really want to grow it. One, because they want specific strains. Because the strains widely range in what they can do to you. So some can make you very sedate, and others can make you like much more like bouncy and like talkative.
Okay.
So that's like a big issue. So if I want a strain specifically to address like two issues, like stomach inflammation and ADD, you know, I want a specific strain that I'm not able to really find a lot of times at the dispensaries. And if I do, it's really expensive. So if I could grow my own, you know, I wouldn't have to deal with these issues. But, yeah, a lot of people don't like that. You know, a lot of the politicians were fighting back against it, saying we could take money away from the industry. We don't know how to regulate it. We'll see. So a lot of people are unhappy that way about that. But all is not lost. There's now a separate bill to deal with medical home grow, at least for patients to be able to grow their own strain, up to 4 plants. That could produce cannabis, and then 4 that are like more dormant, for a total of 8. So that bill has been sponsored by Troy Singleton, of Burlington County in the Senate, Democrat. Now he has 2 co-sponsors, Bingo Paul of Monmouth, Democrat, who I know well, and Declan O'Scanlan, a Republican from Monmouth. And now today, it was announced that there's a companion bill in the Assembly by Verlina Reynolds Jackson of Mercer County. That's like another good. So those are like 2 good signs that the bill is like has possibility of passage.
How is the resistance from the like pharmaceutical companies or? You know, basically established, you know, medical practices. Is this being embraced or is it seen as something fringe? Like, I remember when I was a rehab counselor for a while, and things like acupuncture and reflexology, you know, were seen as fringe sciences. They weren't really seen as real sciences. And are these things seen as real medicine by the established medical community?
So that's a good question. It's an ongoing issue. It's getting better as we learn more about medical cannabis, but it's really difficult to study cannabis in like an academic setting in the United States due to severe restrictions. So the lack of studies then prevents like having the ability to cite a good study. So like it is an issue, you know, not all doctors, you know, will view it like that well, you know, versus a lot of, and that's, you know, that was an issue initially. I think it's easier to get, to become a doctor in the program officially now. I know in terms of like the general medical community, so, Dr. David Nathan of Doctors for Cannabis, Reform, has been fighting with like the state chapter of the American Medical Association. That's like the premier doctor's group in the United States. So, like, that's been an ongoing issue that they're, like, against it. That's, like, unfortunate. Pharmaceuticals are an interesting question because some of them can pivot into cannabis and some are going to pivot into cannabis versus seeing it as terribly, like, this thing that's going to, you know, like, eat into the profits. Some might see it that way. It's really with the rehab centers that I found were, like, in my research into, like, the opposition. Like, it's really with the rehab centers, which I think saw it more as, like, a zero-sum game that, like, they needed to fight this and were really active with the opposition in that fashion. Because, you know, even, like, a lawyer who prosecutes and deals with cannabis crimes, you know, they can move on and practice in other kinds of law. For example, you know, police can be, you know, redirected towards, you know, worse crimes, heroin, murder, trafficking of other things. In that fashion to say, you know, they're not going to be out of a job and that. A lot of people want that. You know, they say, like, once they get them to stop ignoring cannabis, they could focus on more serious crimes that require, like, long-term investigation, like in The Wire.
Yeah, it's alarming how many people in our prison system are there for, you know, things like possession of marijuana. It was really alarming. I saw a report the other week. Don't remember the details in terms of the exact numbers, but it was very disturbing. I know that when the opioid crisis became like the focus of media attention, and there were changes in the amount of pain prescriptions people could take. I remember a lot of people who were on pain medications or in pain management programs. They were the amount of pain they all of a sudden had to deal with increased greatly. And I remember a lot of them were hoping that something would happen with they were calling it medical marijuana. And these were mostly older people. And I know they had a great interest in, you know, that moving forward as a method of pain management. So I don't know if that's still the case.
Yeah.
But, when I was talking to people about it, that was what the main concern was, that, there is an opioid crisis and something should be done about it. But all of a sudden, to not allow people who need the medications for their pain management, you know, to do without, that wasn't a good solution, you know, especially if you're on pain management. So they were putting their hope in the medical marijuana, that would be a reality and that they would qualify for it so that they could manage their pain better.
Oh, yeah. I've met several people who were on opioids for pain and, like, really could not function and were still in pain, who have since moved to medical cannabis and are, like, exponentially better. They're able to, like, have, like, a high quality of life functionality that they never really had under opioids for the pain. And that's, like, a really great part about it. You know, somebody who's been on, like, several pills and could barely still move, like, cope with life was still just able to, you know, live and be, like, an active member of the community or using cannabis. And, yeah, there's a lot of great stories about like that, actually.
Now, other than Hetty, New Jersey, what other tools exist to increase people's awareness?
So there's a program in Stockton University that's trying, like, for, like, a minor in cannabis studies, actually.
Okay.
I think there's a couple other programs in New Jersey. And William Patterson, I think, has a program where they're studying cannabis. There is a class that's being run as, like, a special class that's not accredited, like a special, like, quick program for people that want to get in the industry being run out of, I think, Raritan Valley Community College and Mercer Community College. They wanted to find that in terms of education. That's really education of, like, the specialized thing. Like, mass education, you know, of these issues is, like, an issue. You know, mm-hmm. he was always like the more mainstream media. You know, like I cultivated Hedy and Jay, and like we are the people that like agreed that there should have been cannabis reform like 3 years ago. Plus, like a lot of the changes that we're fighting for and like still want to see, like these are like people have been struggling for like 10 plus years on these issues.
Wow.
And it's really bad. Yeah. You know, it's really crazy. And like, see progress. You know, this week was great. On Washington's birthday, Murphy signed at 2:22. So that was like really fun on Monday. There was no big ceremony actually, which was really disappointing because the bill, it was really got down to like the wire that they needed to be signed, whereby like the legislature was delayed twice, the assembly delayed twice to meet to give them more time to make a deal. So the bill was supposed to be 45 days after the bill is signed, it's supposed to be either vetoed or signed into law or conditionally vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept pushing it to give them time for a cleanup bill to address what to do with minors with cannabis. So they had pushed it twice. And then, like, you know, this week Murphy's still dealing with COVID, and then there's the budget addressed the following day. So there was no signing ceremony, which was kind of a shame.
Mm-hmm.
On some level, I've been to like a few of his signing ceremonies, you know, where you give out pens, it's a great cheering. Usually it's a good like publicity like event for, like
mm-hmm.
a successful governor. So that did not exist. But no, it's, you know, we still, you know, got a good speech from him, and you know, we still have our victory. So it's good to have that, you know, after fighting for it. And there were a few times, you know, it looked like it was all going to fall apart, where we would have like a weird gray market where like we wouldn't really have legal cannabis to buy, that we would have kind of cannabis that was like street cannabis that you weren't going to get in trouble for in a very weird situation. Washington, D.C. is like that, actually. And Vermont has been like that. They, I think, have been making progress after a long while.
Now, how you're an activist, and you've had activists on the show, so you're involved, you know, as you're describing, in that whole movement. How can people who are interested, like, where would they go if they're interested in learning more about the issues and getting involved in changing society so that, you know, cannabis is more accepted and more, you know, an integral part of our health system?
So there's a couple groups that could join that would be really good for that. So there's NORML, with no A, NORML. So that's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And they're like a really good advocacy group. I went to a convention in 2019. We did some advocacy as well. That was really interesting. They have like a lot of like grassroots efforts, you know, forward this email to your, you know, your member of Congress, your assemblyman, and keep people updated on that. There's also the Coalition of Medical Marijuana, for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey, CMMNJ, led by Ken Wolski, and many others who are on their board and good people. They've been doing like a lot of like grassroots advocacy on these issues. Going back to the medical cannabis law, HUMA, in 2009 and 2010. And even before that, they've been working, starting around 2002. Those are like great groups, like in that fashion. Other groups have been like adopting it as part of their like overall platform and message. Like I was advocating for the Latino Action Network because it's criminal justice issue that counts the bias against Hispanic communities and targeting Hispanics for what we realize is a plant that helps people and is a lot better for you than drinking and a lot of pills. And then has never killed anybody.
Yeah, that's
unlike heroin, alcohol, and tobacco.
From what little I know, that appears to be very true. And you've been involved in this struggle for a long time, as you've shared. Where do you see the fight going in the near future, and also like in the far future? What things are going to take a handful of years, and what things, let's say, will take the next decade or more? Because you've shared that some of these initiatives have been ongoing for a very long time, and it took a very long time to get to where we currently are.
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, like as I mentioned before, HumGrow, I think, is like the next big fight that we weren't able to win in this fight. And, you know, that might take, you know, a few months. That might take a few years. You know, that's a big issue. People want to grow. We'll see what happens with that. And the other big, so basically this thing has to be implemented. We have to have our just marketplace implemented by the Cannabis Regulatory Commission. Diane Reynou has been appointed the chair of the commission. She was a former ACLU advocate for legalization before being appointed to work for Governor Murphy. And now she's been appointed chair of that. So people like her, but a lot like is going to be done by this commission. We don't know everybody who's going to be on the commission. We know, I think, 3 out of the 5 people or so.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be the commission. And then the executive director is going to be Jeff Brown, who runs the medical cannabis program. For many credit for a lot of their expansion. They started with 15,000 patients and 6 dispensaries. So now we're up to 100,000 patients. We only have 13 locations. So the numbers are still much better. And I get people are happy in that fashion. You know, the medical cannabis program was expanded last year. There was a lawsuit that was preventing the issuing of 24 licenses. That was just dissolved. So hopefully, like, more licenses will be issued very quickly. And that will help many people. So, like, seeing that, like, these licenses, though, go to Hispanics, you know, go to African Americans from some of these, like, inner city communities, and seeing, you know, where the money that the tax revenue goes,
mm-hmm.
Is a big question. You know, seeing the amount of arrests. You know, I think we were up to what? It was 94, no more, I think was the campaign they were going to have in 2019 based on numbers from, it's like 100 people arrested a day, basically.
Wow.
The number's only been going up, punchline. So, like, seeing that number stop, go down, and it hasn't stopped since the referendum. It's only gotten worse in some situations, possibly. So seeing, like, the cops stop that, seeing them not disproportionately target youth for possession charges will be interesting because, like, there's a great deal of punishment mechanism built into that bill. If a cop is found to have been, like, racially biased, you know, because they need to be wearing body cams. And that footage can be reviewed against them. So that's, like, a really big thing. You know, seeing that we can get, like, the amount of dispensaries that we need will be, like, really interesting. So, like, the higher the numbers, like, the better I like, that are, like, crazy to say, like, even if we were at, like, 100, we wouldn't have enough, though. That's almost what people are saying. That's the question, like, how many dispensaries do you need? Each license holder is able to have about 3. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. There's a lot of towns that don't want it. Other towns make it so it can't be near churches, schools, and that leaves a very limited amount of real estate that could be where the dispensary could be placed. That whole thing is a process, and that's actually the worst part, is that, like, it's not only do we have to fight on the state level, we almost have to fight at, like, every municipal level for, like, approval for a dispensary. So that's, like, really annoying, and there's a lot of towns that are, like, against it, and some of them are not always towns that you would expect to be in. You know, we have the more progressive towns, for example, Montclair was the first town with the dispensary. Places like Montclair are going to have one. So, you know, we're expecting Jersey City, Hoboken, Bayonne, where I'm now living, to have them. Princeton will likely get one in the next round. Flemington might have one. Asbury Park wants one. Definitely. Atlantic City really is going to have at least two, not more. Yeah, they'll probably have like at least three. They really want to like benefit from it. Yeah, it's a struggling place. And you have millions coming in from gambling, but like that money doesn't really stay with people in that city. As much as they deluded themselves about that. So we'll see what happens like with the stores that are set up. We'll see what happens with like the quality of it, with the price of it. You know, with the people who will get the licenses. You know, a lot of people are saying the underground market has been providing people with cannabis when they've needed it for the medical issues. Are they going to be allowed to get a license? And, you know, that's a big issue. There's nothing that's preventing them, but we'll see what happens. And so should they be allowed in? You know, in Mexico, you know, there's issues where you have, you know, like large violent cartels. Here, you know, we might be talking about giving it to, like, petty guys that are nowhere near as violent as the cartels. So, you know, we live, and then, you know, there's a lot of, like, ongoing federal issues, you know. So cannabis in one state cannot be sold to another state, even if both are legalized states. There's a lot of this, so we'll see what happens on the federal level in terms of like some issues, you know, in the new Biden administration. Some of it might go really well. A lot of people are hoping it will. They believe Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer wants banking reform to help make cannabis businesses easier to bank, to deal, and then, you know, like dealing with some of these like decriminalization issues on the federal level would be really interesting. So we'll see what happens. You know, things could be you know, a lot worse in that sense, you know. So people are you know, really optimistic about Biden. And Cory Booker was grilling Merrick Garland about cannabis since he's likely to become Attorney General. Previously, people didn't really know his opinion. At a hearing this week, he was like, yeah, this has been terrible. This is really racially biased. So that was really great to hear from Merrick. Merrick Garland of the 2016 Supreme Court debacle. So
progress is being made. There are battles still going on. There are still things to sort out, and this will be going on for quite some time. But it's better than it was before. I guess that summarizes it.
Yes, I think it does summarize it. You know, we did won a good victory. So that good victory makes more things should be easier, but that doesn't mean there won't be things to address and issues to monitor and stories to write for HettyNJ.com.
Yeah. I put a link to your HettyNJ editor page, and I put a link to something else. Let's see, I took your book, and I put a link to the book that you reviewed today. So I think those links are there. Is there anything else you'd like me to link to?
No, I think that's it. Thank you.
And for people who are not on Facebook, if you could share your contact information and where they can go to read your writing and read your book, that'd be great.
So HettyNJ.com, HeadyNJ.com is my site covering cannabis news, CBD and hemp in New Jersey and the region. So I encourage people to go to that and hit our shop button to see where they can buy my book, Cannabis 101, where I detail the basics of the plant and the industry and politics that have emerged with legalization. So my email, then, if you're interested in contacting me, is dan@headynj.com.
Awesome. Dan, thank you so very much. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, and it sounds like you got a lot going on, a lot to report. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you. Definitely, Hercules.
And I wish you success with all your endeavors. It sounds like you're busy but productive.
Yes, that's a good way to describe it.
And thanks to everybody who's joined us tonight from home, whether you're listening live. I know we have some call-ins listening, or whether you're going to be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We're going to close off with Golden Bow, one of Virginia Ackley's songs for which she's won many awards.
Of her cries, Lady of Moonlight, Lady of Day. Lady of Moon.